Hi, everybody. It's good to see you. We'll wait a couple minutes. Hey, Makita.
Hey,
I'm
Johanna.
gonna
Hey,
make.
everyone.
Oh, I didn't have my sound on. Say that again.
I said hello.
Hi. I am gonna go ahead and make you co-host.
Sounds good. Okay.
It.
Got it. Thanks.
I think we should wait like another half a minute
Yeah,
before.
that's fine. All good.
Good to see everybody. As you all know, I've been off the last couple of weeks, so I'm coming out of my hiding for this class today, which I'm really excited about, and then I'm going to go into hiding for a few more days.
I feel honored that you came out of hiding for this.
I was gonna say, but I'm kidding. All right, well, I think we should get started. It's one after, we'll just trust that everybody that is meant to join us live today is gonna join us. Before I hand everything over to Makita, I just wanted to say a couple of things. And the first is, Makita, thank you so much for being here. I feel so honored, and I feel that we're all so lucky to have you and your presence and your expertise on this really, really important topic of being equitable and inclusive. When it comes to race, it's so important not just to be in integrity, but also it's in addition to that, it's a matter of being trauma informed. And I think what I just wanted to share that just felt important as we kicked off is that just my personal experience, which is that there's no arriving in this topic. This is a topic that I have been coming back to as a white person for many, many years. And what I have really learned for myself is that the moment that I think I got it is the moment that things are gonna get leakier for me. It's one of those things that I've really learned is important to just keep on committing to learning more, and to embodying more. And it's a topic that for me, for sure, and I know for a lot of folks, is it's hard. And it can be uncomfortable at times, and as it should be. I think if we're really doing the work, that it is uncomfortable. And that is another reason why I'm so happy and feel so honored to have Makita here, because not only is she an expert on this topic, but she is a master coach. And a master of understanding human behavior. And so I know we're just in excellent, excellent hands with Makita. I'm gonna read her official bio. Makita Pennycook is a teacher, facilitator, and certified life coach and change strategist with over 2 decades of experience in leadership and personal development. Her genius is holding space as people navigate change, specifically the space between what was and what is not yet. Change is hard, and it is in that in-between where most people get stuck, overwhelmed, and or retreat back to what is familiar. Makeda's ability to hold space for the in-between has proved beneficial for white women who want to step into the work of unlearning and seeing with new eyes on their way to becoming anti-racist. She's convinced that until all of us are free, none of us are free, and will gladly walk with anyone who is committed to the freedom of all. Makeda, thank you so much for being here, and I'm gonna put myself on mute and let you take it away.
Ah, thank you, Joanna. I appreciate it. I appreciate all your kind words, and thank you to everyone for being here. I'm gonna go ahead and say that my computer seems to be having a moment, so if you hear some humming in the background, it's my computer telling me it's too hot and it'll just be fine. There's a fan sitting on it, there's a fan in it, it'll be all right, but I just wanted you to know, if you hear the humming sound, that's what it is. Before we get started, I have a few invitations I'd like to extend to the room. First, if you don't already have pen and paper, I really encourage you to grab some. I really would like for you to take some notes today. And also, I'm going to invite in some reflection throughout our time together. I also do not like being a talking head, so this will be interactive. I want to hear your voices. If you have questions, I want you to ask them. We do ask that you stay muted as much as possible throughout. And when you have questions, please feel free to unmute yourself. You can also pop it into the chat. I'm going to be doing some screen sharing, and when the screen sharing is happening, I am not always able to keep up with the chat, but I will try to do as much as I can. I will do the best that I can while that's happening. So know that I want to hear your voices. I'm going to ask for your invitation. I'm going to ask for your feedback. I want to hear your voices. I am not a talking head. I am also, in the midst of our time together, I'm going to share some stories and some examples from clients that I've worked with. And what I would like to ask is that the stories that I share, I'm going to ask that they not be repeated outside of this space. The lessons that emerge from those stories, those you can take, but the stories need to stay. So I like to say stories stay, lessons leave, right? So please, if you would just honor that confidentiality. I want to give examples because I find examples to be very helpful to reinforce the ideas. I just want to honor the fact I won't be sharing any names, but I just don't want the stories to leave the space together. Okay. And then whiteness is going to get called out during this call, both as a construct as well as its problematic behavior patterns that can show up inside of whiteness. And that means that at some point during this call, you are likely to get uncomfortable. Now, I noticed that there are several women of color in the room. And to you ladies, I want to say that please take care of yourself as needed. If you need to step away at any point, then either that's either temporarily or if you need to get off the call, that's okay. I want you to do whatever you have to do in order to care for yourself. I know that you know that. I'm not giving you permission as a woman of color to do that. I'm just letting you know that you have that freedom. Your presence here matters and is important to me, and I'm honored that you're here. And I want you to take care of yourself. To the white women or white passing women in the room, I am going to invite you and really encourage you to sit with the discomfort that comes up and to not run from it. Transformation happens in the places of discomfort. True transformation. Just ask the caterpillar, right? When a caterpillar is going through its transformation, there is nothing about that that's pleasant for that caterpillar, nor does it even know that it's about to become something brand new, right? But it stays in that discomfort and it stays in that place to create that transformation. And I want that for you guys. If you truly desire to learn, if you're truly committed to creating safe spaces for Black, Indigenous people of color, then I am going to really encourage you to be in that discomfort and to allow that discomfort to create the transformation it is designed to do. So if at any point today you find yourself checking out, or you are out of your body, or your mind is running and you're doing a few other things in your mind, pull all the tools. You all are in this room because you all have worked with Joanna. You've been in her community for a minute now, so I know you all have tools that you can use. Use all those tools, pull all of those tools in to help you to return to your body and come back to being present in this time together and to be fully present here. This is messy work and it is necessary work, right? So going to really encourage the white and white passing women in the room to really sit with the discomfort that comes up. And then my final invitation is to encourage you to stay out of judgment. So as we go through, I may invite some shares about things that you have noticed within yourself. And what I want you to do is not judge yourself, not judge anyone else in the room, not judge my clients whose stories I might share, right? So no judgment. And instead, I really invite you to come into this time with a spirit of curiosity. So bring in curiosity, because curiosity is going to open you up. Judgment is going to shut you down. And judgment is also going to get in the way of truth. Because what I have found is that when judgment is present, truth cannot emerge. And if truth doesn't show up, then we've got nothing to work with, right? So we're going to leave judgment out of the room, right? So no judgment. It's one of the things that I say so much. I'm convinced it's going to be on my tombstone when I die, right? So no judgment. There's no judgment for anyone. Stay open, stay curious today. Whether the information you hear today is information that you've heard before, or it's your first time hearing it, right? So if you've heard it before, be open to hearing it in a new way, or just hearing it again, because the research suggests that we need to hear things 7 times at a minimum before it actually lands in us. So even if you've heard it before, even if it's a topic you've been in trainings with before, stay open to hearing something in a new way or having the information just land inside of you in a new way. And if you're hearing it for the first time, then I'm really going to encourage you to, again, keep curiosity and let go of certainty. So if you've been certain about one way of thinking and something I say is going to challenge that, I'm going to invite you to just stay curious about that and see what that curiosity might have for you. Okay? How does that sound? I need thumbs up. If you'll pop, I'm good or something. Oh, look at all those thumbs up. Thank you guys so much. All right. All right. So I do have a PowerPoint that I want to share, which is probably what's making my computer angry, but it'll be fine. All right, a couple of things I need to do. All right, can you guys see that? I need you all to tell me now that I've lost you. I've got to get you back too. Whoa, go back. Oh, hello. Good gracious. Okay, can you guys see that? Yes, okay. And now I need to get you all back because I lost you. And there y'all are. Okay. So let's start with this image, okay? What are you seeing? Take a look at that and tell me what you're seeing. And yes, I do want to hear your voices. Heather?
I see a pyramid where, you know, the bottom is the majority. And then as it goes up, it becomes the minority of people falling into those categories.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Heather. Who else? What are you noticing in this pyramid of white supremacy? What are you noticing?
I was just thinking, like, if you don't have the base of indifference or minimization, you can't move up to the top, right? So the base is the foundation.
And that's excellent. Who said that? Because I can't see you. You're not coming up.
Jana.
Okay, great. Thank you. I expected it to show the face of who's talking, and it didn't do that. Uncooperative. Yes, Jana, you are correct. Courtney, thank you for raising your hand. That's helpful. So we're all going to follow Courtney's lead and we're going to raise our hands so I'll know who I'm talking to. Thanks, Courtney.
Sure. What I noticed is that the up at the top of the pyramid is what's very, very obvious and easy to name as white supremacy.
Yes.
And that is as distant as possible from sort of the day-to-day expressions of white supremacy that we might that might arise within ourselves. And it's a lot easier to say, I'm not that, than it is to look down at the bottom of the pyramid and see like, oh, where does this lie in me?
Yeah, that's good. Thanks, Courtney. Anyone else? Barbara. Thanks, Barbara, for raising your hand.
So what I notice is that I would have assumed that it started at minimization, that I didn't really think about indifference as part of this. I could see minimization.
Thank you.
I actually think the Eurocentric curriculum, I didn't really think about that as veiled racism. I would have kind of thought of that more in the minimization category, but that was just my perception.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. Kelly.
Hi, this is a little bit building upon what was said a couple of shares ago, but as I was looking through it, I was thinking about conversations I have about anti-racism with other white people, and or even not conversations about anti-racism, everything from anti-racism to calling people in and recognizing that in the lower, in the base areas, it's so easy for people to be like, that's not me. There's a lot of minimization of what happens in those lower realms. And then part where it's much easier for people to say, I would never, or I'm not a racist because I don't do the top of the pyramid. So that's what I was noticing, that it's much easier kind of other racism towards the top because it's so blatant, but the other parts really insidious. They're much easier to be swept under. And I think for people of color, like friends of mine, like the bottom areas are where they feel it so much from other white people and really feel the impact of racism in those realms, but they're much harder, I have found, for my friends of color to be able to name those and feel okay saying, wow, this really makes me uncomfortable because it's so subtle.
Yeah. Okay, great. I love what I've heard, right? So when people think of white supremacy, when people think of racism or being thought of as racist, they typically do the top of the pyramid, right? So the lynchings, the hate crimes, the KKK, neo-Nazis, that's what we think of. And I think it was Jenna who said that the top is not possible without the bottom, right? The bottom, the bricks at the bottom of a pyramid is actually what holds up the pyramid. It's not the things that's happening at the top, it's what's happening underneath at the bottom that's holding it up. And when it comes to white supremacy and when it comes to racism, these bottom things are the things where the work is. The work, yes, we need to be doing and being mindful of the hate crimes and the KKK and the neo-Nazis, and the inner pieces that involves each individual person is what happens in the bottom of these things, at the bottom, in these bottom rails, the indifference, the I'm not even thinking about it. Why does everything have to become political, right? Those kinds of statements are the things that help hold up white supremacist culture and white supremacist ideals. And so if we are going to have a commitment to dismantling systems of oppression, and in this particular instance, systems of racial oppression, it's critical that we understand that the work that we have to do within ourselves is about what's happening in these bottom layers, right? And that's the work that I do, and that's what this invitation is going to be throughout today's training, is about thinking about some of these things that are at the bottom of this pyramid that are unwittingly upholding racist and white supremacist ideals that maybe we didn't think about before. And we need to have that commitment if we say that we are committed to creating a just and equitable world for all peoples, right? And from my perspective, dismantling racism and dismantling inequitable race systems involves making the unconscious conscious, right? So that indifference, the minimization piece, it's taking those unconscious things that we don't think about at all and being willing to make those conscious so that we can look at them and make different choices. Because we can't change what we are not first aware of. And if we are not aware of it, then we cannot acknowledge it, right? And every 12-step program out there will tell you that you have to acknowledge something before you have any power at all to be able to change the thing, right? And so we've got to be willing to look at it. We've got to be willing to become aware of it in order to then make the commitment to make the changes within ourselves first. So it's about your inner work first. I say this all the time, that anti-racism work is inside out work if you're going to stay in this for the long term. If it is about more than just patting yourself on the back and being a good white person, then it is inside out work that has to happen, because as Joanna said, just when she thinks she's got a handle on it, something happens and she realizes, oh, there's still more to learn, right? And so this is lifelong commitments that we're making here. And I just wanted this image to be in your mind in terms of thinking about the ways that unconsciously we may be upholding these systems without realizing it, okay? All right, I've got a video that I'm gonna show you. And I want you to watch the video and I want you to notice what's coming up in your body and in your mind as you watch this video. I'm going to pause it about halfway through and I don't want you to judge it, right? So before you get the adjusted thinking, I want you to just pay attention to what's coming up for you initially, all right? Let's see if this will cooperate with me.
Are you here? Thumbs up and everybody.
Next, ask yourself why. These are the black stories we've been shown. A narrow view that limits our understanding.
All right, talk to me. What's about to happen? And you've got to raise your hands because my computer is doing weird things, so. Or just say your name before you start talking. So what are you noticing in yourself? What do you think's about to happen? And remember, no judgment. Angie, thank you, Angie. And then Julie, and then Anita, thank you.
I think what I'm noticing, and I also noticed earlier when I took the test, is my own inherent judgment and distrust of the guy who's frozen on the screen right now, the way he's like looking at the kids and, yeah, and all that, like, I notice that I have an inherent like judgment and distrust of his view of what's going on.
Yeah.
And then I have a curiosity about how all these different scenes are tying together, but like, that's just that. But that's the first thing that comes up for me is like, oh, of course the white store owner is having some judgment of these kids who are walking around in his store and thinks that they're going to be up to something and something's going to surprise him and catch him off guard. That's not what he expected.
Okay. All right. So Angie, tell me anything that you notice within your body, yourself, around the various scenes. So the young man is in his lowrider car. These three young kids, two or three kids have walked into this store. These young black men have walked into the store. Mm-hmm. Anything you notice within yourself outside of the thought you might have about the store owner?
I don't know. The kids, I guess, I have like an uneasiness in my system about the kids, and I don't know if that's an uneasiness about if I'm perceiving that they're up to something or if I'm perceiving that they're going to be thought of as being up to something, but there's mm-hmm. something to do there.
Okay.
And the car situation, I don't know that there's I'm just confused about that one. It's not fitting okay. the picture for me yet, but like, yep. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Angie. Julie.
I had some similar responses to Angie's. I was just trying to really stay present with watching and staying curious and being mindful of not being in judgment. Similarly, I felt myself feeling like concerned about the person who's frozen on the screen now, because I felt like, I mean, obviously he's in a role or a position in that store where it's part of his job to view what's happening on the camera. But I felt like, because there was something about the a reaction I was noticing because of the music that was playing, that felt like there was this intensity building. And so it was causing me to feel like, okay, these kids are being profiled, right? He's watching them, he's suspicious, he's also doing his job. And then I was trying to figure out, is there some sort of connection? Like, I didn't know how long the video was gonna be, and I'm assuming we're gonna see more of it. I was like, okay, what is the connection we're being shown between the kids in the store and the woman with the kids and the shopping bags and the guy in the car, and then the guy at the end knocking on a door? Like, how are all of these layers gonna link up, and what are the relationships, or are there connections and relationships? So I was just kind of really trying to stay curious about all of the elements, but I definitely was like feeling concern that the kids in the store were being profiled.
Okay, great. Thank you, Julie. Anita.
Hi. In every situation, I had a feeling that something bad's gonna happen, but that's because of music, because music was like the heartbeat and like something's gonna happen. And then I was thinking, if you would take the music away, if I would be also thinking that something bad's gonna happen because there are black people on the screen.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Thank you, Anita. Thank you so much. Carla.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm looking at it and I'm seeing the stereotypes, you know, some of the three main stereotypes about particularly black people. You know, they might rob me. The drug dealer. And I'm, you know, it's like, it's right there to see. And so checking, I, you know, my nervous system can buy into that.
Yeah.
I can
feel. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks so much, Carla. AJ.
Yeah. I was noticing how familiar these scenes are in the way that black people are portrayed in movies and media, and how, I was taking, you know, this view that, okay, we are watching this movie, there's going to be something, some kind of lesson in it. And with the name of it up there, what's it going to be? But I noticed that I was taking in like the looks on the kids' faces, and considering the sort of the trauma of being a black kid in the store.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to share, AJ?
It's hurting my heart.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. Now I'm gonna let you go, and then Carly, and then that'll be our last share, and we'll keep going. Thank you. Now,
Hi. I noticed a lot of the same things other people have said, but one thing I also noticed was with the mother and her kids, I just, you know, my kids are a little older now, but I just kind of went through the stage where I'm carrying one and pushing a car, you know, so I felt a little softness with her and a little empathy for her, like seeing myself in that position too.
Yeah.
Where I did, you know, I didn't have that same reaction with the other scenes.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks so much. Harley Jo.
I actually raised my hand, I think probably last, which is why I'm being last here. But the reason I raised it is because I was also noticing how I was responding to everyone else's responses.
Yeah.
And thinking too, like, what should I say? And and having some of those kinds of thoughts. And it's interesting because some of the different scenes brought up different things. So in some of them, it was like this, I think we all pointed out in this, the one that we're currently at here, the store, like that, it brought up a lot of anxiety in me. And I think it's, you know, the guy's face, but it's also the kids' faces. And it's also like what's going to happen. And it's the music building. Then we look at the, you know, the guy banging on the door and in the low rider, I'm like, oh, I don't know, maybe he has a gift in there, but just my like thoughts were so different based on the different scenes.
Yeah.
And then also like meta watching my thoughts as other people are responding, like, oh, like, wait, now I want to almost adapt what I'm saying because I want to make sure that I'm saying that I don't know, the right thing or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, it was an interesting kind of meta experience as well happening.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I appreciate you acknowledging that you wanted to adjust your statement based on what other people were saying, right? So there isn't a correct or a right answer. There's only the truthful answer, right? And I want you guys to know that I want you to just say what is, right? But you've all pointed out some very important things around just, even if it's your reaction to this man, that's frozen on the screen at the moment, and we're going to continue to watch this video, or it's your reaction, the softness that you might have felt towards the mom with the three kids, or the anxiety maybe that built up in your body. These are all things that I want you to be paying attention to, because this video does have a point, and we'll talk about that once we finish it up. All right, so let me finish this up for you guys.
But there's so much more to see. Let's widen the screen.
Okay. What's your reaction afterwards? And I'll stop screen sharing so I can see more of your faces. And I think there are things happening in the chat that I can't see. Okay. Relief. Natalie, you want to tell me more about that? Relief that it's a happy ending. Brenda, you also said the same thing. Natalie, I got you first, and then Deva, I got you second, and then Anita.
Like, yeah, as a woman of color, like, yeah, I mean, I, of course, it was like, okay, here we go. I was kind of actually jaded watching the beginning of it, and anything other than just the jaded, like, here we go again. And but a part of me was like, but it might twist. I was waiting to see a twist, and then when I saw the twist, I was like, I actually was relief. It's relief. It's like, it doesn't have to be that ending. It doesn't have to be that story. And you know, like, It's so conflicting sometimes being the woman who can feel the feels of the people in the story.
Yeah.
But you know that it doesn't always have to mean what it looks like.
Yeah. Yes. I love that. Thank you, Natalie. Yeah. Same hope. Yeah, I had that same reaction too the first time I saw it. So thank you for sharing. Now, Dava, did I say that correctly? I'm sure I missed.
Oh, no, you said it perfect. Thank you. I just think how much we play into like even the music and the setup and that kind of storytelling and just the opportunity to really allow for a different ending than what might be kind of composed through narration.
Yeah.
So definite relief, but I feel like it was kind of set up to make it look like it could have gone in a darker direction, and really happy to see the beauty of those families and the celebration, and my heart was like,
yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate that share. Thanks so much. Anita, and then Nina.
Part of me was thinking before when watching that if I take music away, that maybe there's going to be like a good ending. And mm-hmm. now when I saw a good ending, I was like, yes. And it also made me think how often in the movies that I saw it was portrayed when there were black people on the screen that something bad's going to happen, and how I have this in subconscious. And lately, when I'm watching series or something, I see more and more series where there are like smart black people, rich black people, educated black people, and it's like, there's diversity of black people, not just black people in the ghetto.
Right. Yeah. So a richer, more expansive view of how a black body can show up in the world.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, thank you, Anita. Nina, and then AJ. Nina, you're, yes.
Sorry, yeah, I forgot to unmute myself. I just wanted to say that I was also like in a place where there was a lot of automatic thoughts for me coming up. About American movies and where they normally go to, what the sort of the narrative is. And I think now I see a lot of variety of TV, but earlier, like my own sort of cultural education or like what I've been watching when I was a teenager and youngster, it's just still there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really just that this story is like, it's, I see how it's going to play out just based on the first sort of the first half of the clip that you showed us.
Yeah.
And just like, this is how the story goes. And it was really heartbreaking to witness that again within myself. This is how I, you know, this is how I imagine that it's gonna, you know, just based upon what I've seen and like, yeah.
Yeah.
The world. But yeah, just like, yeah. Always happy about happy endings. Of course, that was big relief. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate the honesty of your sharing. Thank you all so much. AJ. And there's a lot happening in the chat. I'll come to those in just a second. AJ.
I was feeling kind of hesitant to raise my hand here. I have a little anxiety about taking a turn here again, but I was kind of felt kind of jaded by the end. Like it felt kind of trite to me.
Okay.
The fact that that's I can't even talk right now. The scenes were unexpected. Mm-hmm. That they are, you know, things that we see all the time. There was nothing sort of new about the scene, except that they're black families. Um, I'm not sure if I'm expressing what I'm feeling.
Yeah, I'm not clear. It's not coming through clearly. I'm not sure. Okay. Do you want to try again, or you want to try to pull it together, try to bring your thoughts together a little bit more?
I'll try. I'll try again.
Yeah, no worries.
It felt to me like that was a normal thing that we're seeing at the end. Mm-hmm. That it's there's families having family times,
right?
And the idea that the truth, right? The truth that it has to be in a public service announcement versus the reality that that we experience in media.
Okay, just so then make sure that I'm clear. What you're saying is that for you, the second half of that video, that should be the norm, and that should be how people view people of color, Black people in particular. And the fact that that's not the case and has to be presented in this way was problematic. Yes, is that what you were trying to say?
Somewhat. That's closer than I got, but not quite there. Thank you, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you. Angie and then Carmen, and then we'll keep going. Angie.
Yeah, I guess I just want to name everything that everybody's saying, and Inbal had a kind of a notice that she had in the chat too around like the music and our own implicit bias allowing the music to lead us somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I agree with all of that, but I'm also sitting with like a major discomfort in my body that I'm not willing to name, that even though I'm educated on these things and I've been through many trainings like this, that like implicit bias is still coming up. You see somebody like we don't want to name that, like, oh, what if those kids walking into the store are thugs? Or what if this guy in the lowrider has got a gun and is going to do something bad, because that's what movies have taught us? And our own desire to not acknowledge.
Angie, I'm going to stop you for just 1 second. I want you to keep going. And yeah. Everywhere that you're going to use the word ours or use, I want you to switch that to an I statement. Yeah. So yeah. Keep going. Just use your I statement.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah. And so it's that feeling in myself that I'm so uncomfortable saying, I can see that this is where it's leading. And I've seen this in many movies, and I don't want to state that this is like a wondering or an emotion that's coming up within me, because I am supposed to be more elevated when it comes to viewing something like this. Yes. So I don't want to talk about the discomfort that's happening in my body that's allowing my own implicit bias from upbringing, from the world, from whatever, to actually allow me to speak it in a setting like this, because it doesn't feel PC.
Yeah. Thank you, Angie. I appreciate your honesty there, because I do think that was happening in the room, right? And I think it's an important thing to acknowledge and to name that thing. Remember what I said, we've got to make the unconscious conscious, right? And if we ignore the thing, then we don't bring the awareness and the need to change. We don't recognize it, so then we don't, right? And so I appreciate that you said that. So thank you for naming that and putting that into the space today. Carmen, and then I think it's Michelin, and then we will keep going. Carmen.
Thank you. I'm kind of following what Angie just spoke to, because for me, like at first there was the anticipation and there was a huge built-in anxiety in my body that then became shame. Yes, there was relief on the shift on the stories, but there was shame on recognizing that bias and recognizing that tendency and recognizing my work is not done. Right. I'm not doing my homework.
Yeah.
And it was very challenging to sit with that.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Carmen. And I really appreciate you naming the shame piece, because if there's one thing that I find that gets in the way of people doing anti-racism work at any kind of deep level, it is shame. And the way that shame shuts down, and instead of really being able to move through that shame, the shame becomes a barrier that people seem unable to get past or unwilling to get past. So I really appreciate that you brought the shame piece into the circle,
for us to really think about when we feel that shame. That shame is a judgment, right? And remember what I said, if there's judgment, there can be no truth, and then there can be no transformation. So thank you so much, Carmen. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Michaelyn, I saw the pronunciation.
Yeah, thanks. I just feel a lot of sadness for myself, and I just want to acknowledge that and take up some space for the sadness that I feel. I remember being raised in an environment of racist jokes and prejudice, and now when I see the video, when I'm out and about in my normal everyday life, and I see someone of color, I can feel that initial subconscious judgment taking place in my mind and in my body. I feel it happening. And I catch myself and I try to course correct and I try to open up my heart and open up my mind. But the effort that is involved in that points to what I'm missing, like that I have this position that I'm coming from and I have to work hard to overcome that. And I'm sure I'm missing so much richness, so much opportunity, so much openness. And I just feel so much sadness for that fact. Yeah. I'm glad that I'm here and doing the work, but boy, I can never make up for all those lost moments, lost opportunities.
Yeah, and I think Michaelyn is recognizing, right? And choosing to make a different choice when you recognize it, right? Again, unconscious, becoming conscious. And yeah, you know, there was a point to all of this. So thank you, Michaelyn, I really appreciate you sharing, right? Wanted you all to begin to see the ways in which a stereotype, an unconscious bias, whether you recognize it immediately or it's something that just happens instinctively, shapes how we move through the world and shapes how we see, in this instance in particular, Black people, and I would argue all people of color. I am a Black woman, so I'm gonna talk a lot about Black people and Black experience because, well, I'm a Black woman, right? But I invite you all to think about this in terms of using the law of adaptation that I know Joanna talks a lot about, to recognize that this lens goes towards all people of color, right? And these unconscious biases, whether they've come from media, movies that we've seen, news reports, and then what the news is putting out, or the environments that we grew up in, right? This white supremacy is the air that we are breathing. It's the water that we are swimming in, right? So there are assumptions that have been made about Black people, and without pausing long enough to interrogate those narratives, you'll continue to have those instincts that cause you to want to pull away from, cause you to want to judge, to cause you to not widen the lens, right? To really see that there are these rich experiences that we are having that is our normal lives, and there's not enough representation of those things out there in the world. So you've got to be willing to interrogate that assumption within yourself. I was able to see some of what was going on in the chat, and I saw a lot of relief about the second half of how that video unfolded, right? And I was also grateful for the change in the narrative. And what feels important is recognizing that we feel the relief because we had a different expectation of how that was gonna go. And those expectations that we had were shaped by those unconscious biases that we have, that we don't realize that we have, or maybe we even do realize that we have, right? And so I just am wanting us to really, again, think about what's happening inside of us so we can really begin to think about how we can make some of these changes that we need to make, moving it not just out inside of an intellectual level, but embodying it. That's why I wanted you to pay attention to what's happening in your body when you watch a young Black man driving down the street in a lowrider car, right? Do you assume he's a troublemaker and he's a part of a gang? Or do you assume that he's on the way to see his family? What's the assumption that you make, right, when you see? And what does your body tell you, right? These are all pieces that are important in this anti-racism journey that you guys say that you're on. And I want you to really recognize that this is not head work, this is embodied work. that we do here, in at least from my perspective and in the way that I approach anti-racism work, it's embodied work. All right, so let's talk about unconscious bias and let's give it a definition, right? It's our feelings, our attitudes, and our stereotypes that impact, actually I have this on the screen, that might be helpful, hold please. I'm gonna bring it back up my PowerPoint and my computer will continue to be mad at me and that will be okay. All right, unconscious bias, there you go, a definition. Unconscious bias is when our attitudes, feelings, stereotypes impact our understanding of and our judgment of and interactions with other people. And in this, for the sake of this conversation, we are talking about Black, Indigenous people of color, right? So unconscious bias is when those stereotypes interfere and get in the way or impact our judgments and our interactions with people. Now look, the brain does not like incomplete stories, right? We are faced with 11 million pieces of information almost every second that the brain has to process. And it's gotten worse in the last few years because of social media and the news is right at our fingertips. And so there's a whole lot more information that our brain has to process. And yet it can only process but so much information at one time. And so the brain will create shortcuts in order to be able to handle all of that information, right? And these shortcuts can in turn turn into biases, because those biases become quick and easy ways for us to filter out the people and the interactions that we're having out in the world, right? And when I think about how those biases can form and the way that those shortcuts can show up, one of the main shortcuts that the brain is going to use is in assessing safety. So the brain is automatically going to make some assumptions and put places and things into categories depending on if the brain believes that it is safe or poses a threat to our safety. Now that is ingrained in our DNA, right? Because when we were early evolution of man, we needed to be able to stay safe, right? So we had to be able to quickly identify was something a threat or not, right? Our brain still does that, right? And this instinct to lean towards safety will cause us to think something is unsafe when it might not actually be unsafe. And when that happens, we armor up against the threat, right? And so this is happening in split second decisions that are being made here, right? We armor up against a perceived threat without first deciding or figuring out whether or not the threat is actually real. Now here's the thing, people of color are disproportionately on the receiving end of biases that name us as unsafe, even when there are no facts to go on. Because in the absence of information, the brain is going to find create a story to tie up the loop. It does not like open loops. So it needs a way to complete the loop. So if you see a Black kid in a neighborhood that quote unquote, that child doesn't belong in, right? Your brain needs to understand why he's there. You make up a story about why he's there. And then you start operating from that story without deciding if that story is true. I'm gonna stop sharing because I have a story actually that unfolded just yesterday with one of my clients that I think beautifully exemplifies this. I love how the universe creates these opportunities. So this is one of my anti-racism one-on-one clients that I'm engaging with yesterday. We were having this conversation. She brought to me a situation that she was that she had faced because she wanted to know how she could have responded to quote unquote help. So the situation is she's at a high school football game. Yes, that's the season that we're in. It's a high school football game, and I don't play sports. I don't have children who play sports, so I think that's an accurate thing because that's almost fall. So she's at a high school football game. This is a high school that used to be predominantly white, and then the white families pulled their children and started sending them to private schools, and so now the diversity in the school has gone up, right? So it's far more diverse than it used to be. Bren, that might be my computer because it's a little bit upset with me right now because I'm using too much. So that might be what you're hearing, okay? Maybe if I stop PowerPoint, it'll feel better. All right, let me finish my story. So she's at this football game. She's sitting on the bleachers. She looks over, and there is a woman who has a little boy by her side. And the woman is having an argument with someone in the stands. She's having an argument with someone else, right? And so my client knows it's four men that she's having the argument with. My client knows one of those people. And so she starts to pay more attention to what's happening. And this is what my client said to me. She said, well, she was obviously lower income and she obviously needed some help and I wanted to help her, right? And I just was trying to figure out how I could help her. Maybe if I went and offered to buy her food, if that would help her, or maybe I could just, like my client was trying to figure out how she could help. And she was coming to me because she wanted me to tell her how she could help, right? So, and there's one other piece in this. No, that's how my client gave me the information. Now, based on what we've been talking about around unconscious bias, what was my client thinking? What did you hear in my clients? Where were her unconscious biases potentially showing up? Where are you noticing it?
I feel like I heard that she was projecting her, maybe projecting is not the right word, but she was making an assumption that this woman was lower income. She was making an assumption that this woman was out. And I guess I felt like a sort of savior or hero complex. That's the right way to put it.
Yep.
I may have missed the part of the story where you shared who your client was with while watching this game, but it felt to me like her attention was not with who she was with and was instead somewhere where it wasn't really appropriate for her to be.
Right. She was by herself. Her son was playing. So she just happened to notice the altercation and then started paying attention to it. So I see some things. Assumption about the person that she's lower income and therefore needs help. Yes, Carly Joe, obviously AJ, right? Brenda, I hear, the static. I'm hopeful that will go away shortly. Heather.
I think what I heard was, you know, obviously the bias of being lower income, but also the assumption that, you know, if I buy her something to eat, that will make it better. I come across this a lot in my work. And like one of the things that I like about the organization I work with is we always will survey our clients and participants before we design a new program or something like that.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Thank you. Anyone else? What are the biases where you might see were showing up for her? I heard the low income one a lot. Yeah. Courtney?
Well, I noticed that she didn't have seemingly any reaction to the fact that this is a woman alone who's in an argument with four men because she knows one of the men. She just seems to assume that they weren't necessarily doing anything wrong and that her instinct to help was like, oh, how can I alleviate her perceived hunger or whatever it was rather than like, what's going on that these four men are having an argument with these women and like, where do I actually have potential to help? Which is like, I know one of these guys and what the hell's going on right now?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Thank you, Courtney. So she gave the assumption to the men because she knew at least one of them, but she didn't know the woman. So her curiosity or her implication went straight to the woman, right? And asking about what might actually be going on. Yes. Thank you, Courtney. Mm-hmm. How did she see this as an argument? Yes. She also paid attention because she knew one of the men. Okay. Or make the woman stop. It was mostly Carly Jo. She was mostly interested in making the woman stop, right? To make the woman stop what was happening. Thank you guys for sharing. Why I love this example, and when my client was sharing it to me, I was working really hard to stay focused on what she was doing so I could pull the threads I needed to pull, while also thinking this is gonna be perfect for this training tomorrow, right? So both of these things were happening. There were a lot of threads that I needed to pull out of that conversation beginning with the thing that someone noted in here is, did you actually know it was an argument, right? So tell me what told you that it was an actual argument. I asked her about the low income, and her response to that was, well, she was, her clothes were dirty and there was a tear in her shirt. And I was like, okay. And maybe she needs to do laundry and she just hadn't had time to get to the laundromat, because how many times have I pulled clothes out of the laundry, the dirty clothes to put on, because I'd have run out of clean clothes, right? Do you see how, like, I really believe that if this was a white woman, my client would have made a different series of assumptions. And the food one, I had to work really hard to get Spirit to help me to find a way to frame that one, because I was like, what made you think she was hungry? And ultimately what it boiled down to, and why I'm bringing it up in this safety piece, is my client felt wildly uncomfortable. And as the altercation, the argument was continuing, more people were paying attention. So now my client wants to make not just herself feel better, but she wanted the people around her to also feel better, and felt like this Black woman needed to be removed from the situation and that would make everything better. Right. So she had come, she brought it up to me because she wanted me to tell her how she could have best stepped in to, quote unquote, help the woman. And then that's not where we went, as you can imagine. Right. So it's an important thing to think about. And I'm using this as an example, not to diminish my clients in any way. She's been doing her work for a long time, and there's a reason why she's working with me one-on-one about this, because in nuanced situations like this. And I forgot who mentioned about the white savior piece, right? Heather, I think it was you who mentioned the white savior piece, right? Like this instinct to, like, I've got to go in and rescue her. And I really invited my client to challenge that. Everything that she did in that moment revealed all these biases that she had. And I use it as an example here today because I think it's important for us to think about, or rather, learning how to interrogate the assumptions that we're making. So I would say, if you feel, and what I told my client is, when you have an instinct to want to, quote unquote, help, I invite you to challenge that, interrogate that narrative. Where's that coming from? What actually needs help here, right? And she's low income. Who said? Like, why do you think that? She needs to be fed. Why? Like, where is all of these things coming from, right? So it's interrogating the assumptions that you've made that you don't have actual facts for. Are you guys tracking with me on this? All right, let me give you a coaching example, right? Because I watched this also happen in a coaching situation. So one of my coaching clients, again, she is a practitioner who had been working with a Black woman client who was unapologetic in her Blackness, but she also had been through a lot in her life. And so she was angry and she was frustrated, and she did not hesitate to let her frustration and her anger be known, right? But she'd been through so much in her life, things that made her know that generally speaking, white people were not safe for her. And yet she chose to work with my client, right? So she saw something in my client that she decided that she wanted to work with her. And my client who came to work with, she kept wanting to tell the client to tone herself down or change what she was saying and doing in order to be, quote unquote, more acceptable, right? She wanted her to not be so angry and to not to just, like, just do different so that she could be, so she could be in spaces where people will feel more comfortable with her and therefore be able to hear her, right? Now, here's the thing. Yes, this client did have some things she could be doing differently, so I'm not taking that away. And what I had to help my client see was that much of her insistence that her client change had to do with her own discomfort and the perceptions that she had about her client's anger, right? That it was a both and. She couldn't look at it on her own. She just kept wanting her client to change, right? But couldn't understand that really it was starting from her own discomfort with this woman's anger, because her anger she was receiving as unsafe or a threat instead of really being able to hold that this anger is coming from someplace. I hope I'm making sense here. Is this clarified? Yeah? Okay, good. Got some head nods going. And so it's important. And so for my client, as we peeled back the layers, excuse me, of what was going on, she was mortified to realize that what was happening really wasn't about the client's anger and frustration, which, yes, that's a thing, but really what was at work was her own biases about what that woman's anger meant. And so she was trying to fix her when she didn't need fixing, right? So as long as my client was unwilling to check her biases, she was going to continue to have sessions with this client, which is part of why she brought it up to me, is because the client, excuse me, seemed to be not getting anywhere. And she kept shutting down in the sessions. But she was shutting down because my client kept asking her to do something different, right? Based on my client's own assumptions of who she should be and how she should show up in the world, right? Can you guys see how her bias played into that? Yeah. Barbara, you have a question?
You know, as a white woman, I'm thinking about this in terms of, you know, as a woman, how I've been programmed to, you know, think, oh, food will help things and make, you know, take the hangry out, or, you know, I perceive that as a white woman, I've been much more constrained in my upbringing and environments to, you know, to defer to men or to be polite, to, you know, not go out there and be bold and brave. And so I see this this layered thing of the whiteness imposition, but also the sexism imposition that is happening in both of these circumstances. And that doesn't excuse it. It's just, I think it's helpful to tease it out, to see it more.
Yeah. And Barbara, it's layered, right? It's about that, right? And this is why I say this is not like really real anti-racism work is not something we're going to check off our to-do list. And we came to a training, check, I'm done, and now I'm an anti-racist. It's not the way that it works, because in these nuanced situations that you're talking and that you're speaking to, we have to peel back the layers to understand what piece is like, is that the sexism piece, right? How much is that gender-based, and how much is that race-based, and how much is it both and, right? So thank you for bringing that forward. Thank you so much. Heather.
Yes, when you were telling your story, it got me thinking about a previous class we had with Joanna and how, you know, to, you know, clean our own energy before we step into the container with our clients. And so it seems to me like your client's own experiences with anger was influencing the dynamic of that coaching container.
Yeah, and so I'm curious, Heather, what does that mean for you? So where's the learning for you in that? What does that mean you consider?
I think when, you know, the work that I do, I tend to bring in a lot of my lived experience into the dynamic with my coaching, and I have to remember, you know, to kind of check that at the door and clean that and take the lead from the client that I'm working with.
Yeah, yeah, great. Thanks, Heather. Julie said in the comment, it seems that your client's way of responding would likely to further traumatize her client rather, yes, Julie, support her in moving beyond, yes, yes, you're right. Further traumatize her and further tell her that white people are not safe for her, right? She already had that narrative and now she just continues into that. Thank you, Julie. Carla S. I feel like there's like a Carla and a Carly and a, yeah. Carla.
Hey, listening to all of this, I'm wondering if you're a client who's coaching the woman of color, if the fact that she is, I don't remember if you said she's black or not, but anyway, the fact that she's, we'll call her black, is why she is afraid of the emotion.
Yes, she is black.
A big part of it.
Yeah.
And that if it were, she might be coaching a white woman completely different. And so that's her. And how is that me?
Yes. And that's the important learning, right? Because it was a black woman, and black women anger our anger is not well received in the world, right? Because we are often labeled the angry Black woman, right? And it becomes an easy way to dismiss us and dismiss our lived experience, right? So yes, Carla, you're correct. Thank you. Lauren, and then I'm gonna move us forward because I just noticed the time. Y'all are doing great though. I'm enjoying this conversation. Lauren.
Hi. There's a piece I'm noticing for myself here in really becoming more comfortable in being able to hold the anger of people of color. I tend to take on emotions very, very easily. And so I think the learning for me is trying to find the place of not crossing the line over into moral outrage.
Yeah.
And not being the one who takes on the anger and then tries to do something with it, because that's not productive either.
Yes. Yes, not productive. And actually, Lauren gets in the way.
Yeah.
Very much so. Thank you so much for that. Thank you. I am curious about Julie. Go. And then I have a question for the room.
Thanks. I just wanted to say real quick, I feel similar to what Lauren was just expressing. Just to give you a little background, Makita, I don't have a whole lot of experience coaching. But I was just kind of trying to imagine myself being in that role with this woman and her anger, and in contrast to the way your client responded in her attempt to support her, I would imagine myself wanting to genuinely hold space and just allow her to express all that needed to come forth so that she could feel safe and just listen and not feel like I had to even offer a solution or tools or constructive suggestions, but rather just let her get out what she needed to express and then follow with, like, is there anything more you'd like to say? Like, to just allow her the space to have and feel all that she's feeling around her, what has been her experience. It feels to me like that could be the most supportive, at least initially.
Yeah. So thanks, Julie. What I would say is that you're new in coaching, so I think it's great that you're getting this learning and this integration this at the beginning of your coaching. And what I would say is, as you get into it, and for everyone in the room, so I'm gonna pull the lens back and not just focus on Julie, but say that when you get into your, and you're in your coaching hat and you're wearing your coaching hat, it can be easy to just be the coach. And like, one of the things that I think all coaches, and I know I have to work on this all the time, is remembering that my job is not to fix my client, that they don't need fixing, right? That I'm walking alongside them in their journey. But that's a constant reminder that I have to make, right? And remembering that they are whole and complete, right? And in a dynamic where there is a white person and a Black person in the room, there is already a power dynamic at work. Right? Because whiteness has said in this country, and I would argue the United States and any country where colonialism has touched and or slavery was a way of life, whiteness will always be seen as right and correct, right? White is right. White has more power. And Joanna talks often about leveling the playing field when you're working with clients. And when you are working with a Black client or a client of color, that becomes even more critical for you to level that playing field. I have another client who one of the things that she is having to work on is managing an instinct that she noticed after I asked her about it, because she was telling me a situation, she would notice that with her clients of color, so not just her Black clients, but she saw she was doing this with an Asian client that she had as well, she was doing a whole lot more telling than she would normally do in a coaching session. And she recognized the first time I called it out to her, and I got curious about that, because this is a skilled clinician, right? She knows how to coach and knows how to coach well. So I asked her about this, I asked her about it in one instance that she mentioned to me. And then the next time we got together, she mentioned that she recognized she was doing that with all of her clients of color. That she was doing far more telling than she ever does with her white clients when she's with her clients of color. right? Again, an awareness that that power dynamic that she didn't even realize was there was working itself, where she was giving, she was telling, she was teaching, she was, you know, giving directive, and she's a good coach. She knows that it's not what you do, and yet she was still doing it, okay? Carmen asked, what does leveling the playing field look like? Great question, Carmen. In when we talk about leveling the playing field, means that we come into the space and we recognize that the client is whole and complete, and that they are not broken and they do not need fixing, and that the wisdom is in them and needs to be honored, right? That we're both starting from that same space. And Joanna, I would invite you, if you want to add anything to that, because I know you talk about leveling the playing field, if you wanted to add anything to that, just keeping it simple.
No, I think that perfect for now. Yeah. Although I wonder if Carmen was specifically asking about kind of outshoots of that, if you're coaching a person of color and white passing.
I think that what happens in that, you have to be even more purposeful with that. And not like, you have to really consciously remind yourself they are whole and complete and do not need me to fix them, because there is a part of you that believes they need fixing, because, like, again, it's something you've simply inherited, right? Dr. Yabo Blay, who I love, she did a podcast interview with Glennon Doyle earlier this year. I think it was back in May. And in that podcast, she talked about the fact that white bodies have inherited a relationship to black and brown bodies that tell you all as white people that you can do whatever you want to black bodies and black bodies will just accept it. That's something you've inherited. And I can send Joanna the podcast link, or you can just go search in Glennon's podcast for Dr. Yabo Blay, where she unpacks this more. But when you are a white clinician and you are coaching a black or a person of color, a black person or a black or a person of color, that intentionality, and that has to come to the forefront of your mind so that you don't fall into that trap of trying to fix them or make them right. Okay? Helpful, Carmen? Where are you, Carmen? I just need you to tell me if that was helpful.
Yes, 100%. Thank you. Brilliant. So much.
Thank you. Okay, I love that this is a parallel of this training about leveling the playing fields. Okay, brilliant. Thanks, Gaia. Carly, get to this in the remainder, but how can we move from the head knowledge of anti-racism into true embodiment? Oh, such a great question. I'm going to come to that in a minute when I talk about how why coaching people of color is different. Actually, why don't I just move there? I've got some questions that I want to give you guys to answer to help you unpack some of your unconscious biases. I would like to just give you those questions first, and then we'll talk about why treating people. Thank you, Joanna. I just love when people do things so quickly. Thank you so much. Why treating people of color, or serving people of color, not treating, serving people of color is different, right? So we're going to talk about that distinction in just a second. But some questions I want you to think about to help you uncover your unconscious bias, okay? So the first question, right? So just jot these down, because we're not going to have time for you to answer them. I just am always amazed at how fast time goes when I do these trainings. All right. So the first question, how regularly do I interact with people that have different lived experiences than me? And I will send this in a resource sheet for you guys. But I just want you to think about, how often regularly do you interact with people who have vastly different lived experiences from you? Right? The number of times I get asked when I do that, because I do anti-racism working group settings like this, and invariably someone will say to me, how do I make more black friends? You are asking the wrong question. That's not the question. The question is, how have you structured your life so that you don't interact with black people? Because I promise you, ask any person of color on this call, any black woman or any other woman of color on this call, and she will tell you that we cannot do our lives without interacting with whiteness at some point. So how is your life structured that you do not interact with black people or other people of color, right? So that's the first question. How regularly do you interact? Second question. What issues around race do I not care about as much? Right? So maybe I'm aware of the black-white things because, especially in America, that's a very called out thing, right? Because slavery is such a big part of our history. But maybe I don't pay attention to the violence that Asian American communities are experiencing and how that's going up, right? Maybe when I hear narratives about walls and the border, I shut down. I don't think about them, right? So what issues around race do you not pay attention to? And why is that? Third question, what do I understand about intersectionality? Right? Intersectionality says that I am a woman and you are a woman. There are experiences that we will have, there are oppressions that we will face because we are both women, right? I am a black woman. Joanna is not. I'm gonna face oppression that Joanna is not gonna face because I'm black. Joanna is Jewish. I am not. I'm Christian. Well, maybe these days, I'm not sure it's a label I wanna hold, but so she's gonna face some oppression that I won't face, right? What's important is not reducing the various identities that someone might carry to the one that makes you most comfortable. So we talked earlier about the gender piece, right? And how we have to tease out how much is this sexism, how much is this racism, like I'm having to make those teasing out, right? We cannot reduce someone's experience to the one identity that we can understand, right? So it isn't just about my gender, it's about my race, right? It isn't just about Joanna's gender, it's about her religion as well, right? These are pieces that comprise who someone might be. Do I understand intersectionality, okay? If I'm in anti-racism conversations with people of color, right? Am I listening or am I just waiting to talk? Or am I just talking, right? I've noticed a very disturbing trend recently where white women who have been doing their work for long periods of time, who are very knowledgeable, have suddenly decided that they have all the information now, and now they can become the teachers and they can start teaching people. And I sat in a room with facilitators of color, white facilitators, group of us who are white facilitators and black facilitators. We lead this Dismantling Racism workshop. And the facilitators were meeting. And one of the women in that room, one of the white women in that room, started explaining to one of the black men in the room what microaggressions were. I was shocked. I was like, you surely are not telling this black man who lives in the United States of America in rural parts of North Carolina what microaggressions are. Surely you're not doing that, right? But she was, right? And I've been watching that happen more and more. Race-splaining, yes, Inbal, right? I'm watching that happen more and more with women who do it, doing their work and suddenly decide, I know enough, let me teach, right? And they've moved out of the place of learning and staying curious and are instead now doing telling, right? So when you're having race conversations, are you listening? Or are you just waiting to talk, to share how much you've grown or how much you've learned, right? That's gonna reveal some things for you. And then the final unconscious question I have for you to help you uncover some of your unconscious bias. When you see something on the news or you read anything that's race related, there's a race incident that happens, where do you tend to place the blame? Instinctively, where do you place the blame? Do you expect that the black person or the person of color should have done something differently? They shouldn't have resisted arrest. Why were they in the store at that time? Why did they have, like, what? Where do you put the blame? Instinctively. Do you expect the person of color or the black person to have done something different? Or do you recognize where the fault might actually lie, right? These are the questions that you want to ask yourself to help you think about where you might have an unconscious bias. And the test that I had you take, right? How many of you were surprised by your results? Carly, I see you. I'm going to come to you in just a second. I'd love to just see by raise of hands, how many of you were surprised by your results? Jana, Yes, yes. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to hear Carly's question or comment, and then I'd love to hear what surprised some of you about what you about when you took the test. Carly, and then and Carly Jo.
Yeah. Hi. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So when even when you're asking these questions and in other work that I've done, I can always, okay, not always, obviously, I want to recognize that always, but I can often like have the quote unquote right answer. I'm very good at having the right answer.
Yeah.
And like, I recognize that, that I think that's where my question before was coming from is like, I know logically what I need to do. Mm-hmm. And I also know that I still am facing the like more somatic, the sensation experience mm-hmm. of the unconscious biases. And so I almost like, even with the test, IAT test.
Yeah.
even with that, I can like, I can ace a test because I'm very good at tests. I'm, you know, I've always
been good.
So it's like, I'm recognizing, and I've been recognizing the last few years, few months, that I really need to, I have to go beyond head level. And so maybe like, is that something that you can speak on here? Or do I need to like book in a different session with you? To, like,
no worries. No worries. So yeah, I'll pull the lens back just a little bit because you said something really important, Carly. You said that you know how to write the right answer, right? You know the correct answer to write. So you're going to put the correct answer and there's still a your body is still giving you some information, right? So I would say pay attention to your body because your body's going to tell you the truth, right? And if you ask your body, what do I actually believe here? Not what do I think is true, but what do I actually believe here, right? So if you take away the good, bad, right, wrong, right? So if we took that distinction out and we took out the judgment piece, right? So no judgment, no shame, we got to get to truth, right? So if you judge it as wrong, because I know the right answer, so let me put the right answer, then there must be a wrong answer, right? So my invitation, what's the body saying to you? Like, what does your body say you actually believe, right? And engage at that level and see what comes forward.
That's really super helpful. Yeah, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's so simple, but I'm like, duh. Okay, I can do that though.
Yeah, no worries, no worries. Anita.
So I'm a bit afraid that I'm going to sound stupid.
No but... judgment, love. No judgment.
Okay. So few years ago, when the events were happening in America with George Floyd, mm-hmm. I came in touch like more with anti-racism work. Mm-hmm. And I started reading about it, and I came to know like these terms, white fragility, and all these things. And at some point, I was feeling like, oh my God, I'm racist. I didn't know that I was racist, but now I'm racist. And at some point, I was like, I cannot do this right. Like, whatever I try is like, I'm racist. If I'm in the room with a black person, the black person is gonna see me as racist just because I'm white. And at some point I was like, okay, that's it. I'm white. I'm racist. I'm racist. I'm not gonna fight it anymore. So then I was surprised when I took the test and I see that I have the moderate preference for black people over white people. And I was thinking like, how I'm lately I was becoming afraid of black people and now I have this preference. So yes.
Anita, thank you so much for sharing. I really appreciate that. No judgment. Yeah, lots of people had lots of awareness that came forward during that summer of 2020 with George Floyd's murder. And it's a continual learning, right? And a continual accepting of what is true. Yeah. And I will say that based on what you said, that again, I want to pull the lens back for a bigger conversation to be had around understanding this good, bad binary and the ways in which the need to be seen as good and right, right? To use Carly's words, I think what the two of you have said connect, that if we can let go of that, right? I'm good, I'm bad. That need to be seen as good gets in the way, because your need to be seen as good will stop you from doing the work, right? So really want to encourage all of you in the room, when you find yourself falling into that instinct, that you allow yourself to say, this is not about being good or bad, because we are all made up of light and shadow. All of us are made up of light and shadow. So it's not a question of, are you bad or are you good? It's a question of, I am both and opening that up, okay? I am aware of the time and we are supposed to be ending. I need to ask permission. Can we go like 5 minutes more? I would love to just explain really quickly about why serving people of color is different. Joanna, I just want to check in with you about that. My apologies. I just got so caught up in the conversation.
Yes, absolutely. Before we do, because I know some people will have to hop off,
yes.
And they can listen to the recording, but before, if anyone has to hop off at 4:30, before you get to that, I just want to quickly give you an opportunity, Makeda, to share with everybody how they can go deeper with this work with you. This has been amazing. And I also know it's just toe dipping.
Right.
And I have a sense that there are some people that really want to go deeper and into that embodiment piece. And so please just, if you could share for a moment.
Sure. Thank you, Joanna. And again, my apologies. I just got so caught up in the conversation, I lost track of time. So I do this work one-on-one with people, and where my one-on-one work does is in some of these nuances and pulling out the interactions, right? So we've done like big levels. And so if you want to explore working with me one-on-one, I'm gonna put my email, my personal email address in the chat. So there it is. If you would like to explore, just shoot me an email and I'll send you the link to set up a conversation. I don't want to try to go find it because my computer was already having issues. So just email me and we'll go from there. And that's my personal email and I check it. So I wanted you guys to have that if you wanted to explore what working with me one-on-one could look like. Joanna, I do want us to go ahead and say thanks to you and to everyone that's in the room. And for those of you who do have to drop off, thank you all so much for being here. I promise to just take a few more minutes. I just want to explain to you guys why Carly Jo, you are on top of it, girl. Explain to you why working with people of color is so different. So I want to explain that and then I'll let you guys go on to the rest of your Tuesday. So here's the thing. Generational trauma is a thing. And Black and brown bodies carry the centuries of being systemically brutalized, abused, raped, objectified, and controlled. We carry the trauma of the transatlantic slave trade. Now, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, but I am Jamaican, right? So I am not, and I'm a first generation American. My whole family is Jamaican. So I do not have the African American history around slavery. I have the West Indian Jamaican history of the slave trade, which the majority of the Africans who were stolen from Africa were actually deposited in the Caribbean countries, not in America, right? And so my family carries that trauma. We are carrying the unhealed trauma of generations and generations and generations. All right, guy, I see you, sis, right? We carry generational trauma, unhealed trauma inside of our bodies that you guys as white people or white passing people do not know anything about, right? To know that our bodies, we were not even considered human. The only reason they would even count us as human in 3/5 was so that they could get their tax thing or get their money and their benefits, right? We were not even considered human. We had no souls, right? And again, with Dr. Yaba Blaze's podcast, where she talks about the inheritance that you all have gained in terms of what you think about your right to the Black body, right? Whiteness's right to the Black body. I talked about this for those of you who listened to the first part of the anti-racism training that I did, microaggressions, and how people will come up and touch my hair. I have braids, if y'all can't see that. But when my fro is out, it's like big. and people just come up and touch my hair for no reason, right? Because they're curious about it. I'm not an animal, don't touch me, please, right? That generational trauma, anytime there's any kind of racial violence out into the world, that trauma gets re-triggered inside of our bodies, right? Thinking about the example of my client from earlier, when her client was so angry, she's carrying trauma inside of her body, right? And again, it is not your job to try to fix that. We are well-equipped and well-resourced. We are doing our healings. We know the things that we need to do as Black people, as brown people, the communities that we need to be a part of in order to stay energized and to stay healthy. We know how to prioritize our joy, right, in order to be with that, right? And being in predominantly white spaces is exhausting for us, right? And like I said earlier, white people can set up their lives in such a way that they don't interact with people of color. We do not have that same benefit. We are not able to do the same thing, right? And so what I want you all to begin to appreciate is that when you step into a space and there are people of color in that space, I don't want you, you do not handle us with kid gloves, right? Because that's not about making us feel better. That's about making you feel better. We don't need you to handle us with kid gloves, right? We just want you to acknowledge that we're bringing into the space experiences that you cannot comprehend. You do not know our lived experience and you cannot wrap your head around our lived experience. We just need you to acknowledge that it's a thing for us, right? And we bring it with us. So that generational trauma piece, and I know Joanna has mentioned this author, but Rezma Menekin's book, My Grandmother's Hands, does such a beautiful job of talking about generational trauma in both the Black and white bodies, right? But specifically what I want to speak to in this sort of why coaching us is different is around this generational trauma piece of it that we are carrying and why you have to stay mindful of that, because you might think I'm a good person. Why would you be angry with me? Because I ain't angry at you. I'm angry at the whiteness that you represent, which some days I can manage that just fine and I'm good with it. And other days I'm just not. Like the day of the riots last year, I was supposed to lead a anti-racism training that day. And I said, no, I can't. There's no way that I'm gonna walk into a room full of white people on the day when a bunch of white people decided they were gonna try to take down our democracy. That wasn't gonna happen, okay? So I just want you all to have that nuanced piece inside of your brains and inside of your minds. And if you have questions around that, again, feel free to shoot me an email. I'll try to unpack that even further. But I just did want to put that piece in there because it's important for you guys to acknowledge that. Okay.
Makeda, thank you, thank you, thank you so much. I taking notes and learned so much and feel a deeper integration. And, you know, just end how I started and saying that I just feel so honored that we're able to have you and your experience and your presence and your coaching and all of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanna. And thank you so much for having me. And thank you all for everyone who participated and asked all your questions and for the honesty that came into the space. I really am so grateful. Thank you all so much. And yeah, I'm available if you have questions. Thank y'all. Bye.
Have a great day, everyone.